is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
This program was transcribed. Stay tuned to this station of the NBC Radio Network for the very finest in radio listening. Hear Phil Harris and Alice Faye at 7 tonight on NBC.
KFI, Los Angeles, Earl C. Anthony, Incorporated. Once again, the Standard Owl will present the world's greatest music tonight of a KFI. Featured soloist will be Caesar Curtsey, tenor. The program will include such numbers as Beethoven's Leonore Overture, Schubert's Symphony No. 8, and selections from Don Giovanni by Mozart. Remember, the Standard Hour, 8:30 tonight, over KFI.
The United States Steel Hour presents the Theater Guild on the air production of An Ideal Husband, starring Rex Harrison and Lily Palmer. Helping to build a better America through better steels and products of steel is the job of the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel. Look for our trademark, USS, on any steel product. It's your guide to quality steel. And now, as the lights go down at the Belasco Theater in New York, here is Elliot Reed speaking for the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, for the first time in several seasons, we bring you a play by one of the most brilliant playwrights of his time, indeed of almost any time. It is An Ideal Husband by Oscar Wilde, a chuckling comedy of love and intrigue. Two of Broadway's most scintillating stars, now appearing in the Theater Guild stage success Venus Observed, are here to perform in it, Rex Harrison as Lord Arthur Goring and Lily Palmer as the elusive but oh-so-charming Mrs. Cheaply. So we raise the curtain on An Ideal Husband, adapted for our broadcast by Arthur Arendt and directed by Homer Fickett. It is London in the year 1895, the fantastic, fashionable London of gaslights, hansom cabs, and the charming but rather eccentric men and women who make up high society. In the brilliantly lit octagon room of Sir Robert Chiltern's house in Grosvenor Square, a formal reception is being held. On the receiving line are Lady Gertrude Chiltern and her young sister-in-law, Mabel, as the majordomo announces a late arrival.
Lord Caversham.
Ah, good evening, Lady Chiltern. Has my good-for-nothing son arrived yet?
I don't think so, Lord Caversham. Lord Caversham, may I ask you why you call your son good-for-nothing?
Certainly, Mabel. Because he leads such an idle life.
How can you say such a thing? Why, he rides every morning at 10 o'clock, goes to the opera 3 times a week, changes his clothes at least 5 times a day, and dines out every night. You've no idea how busy that keeps him.
Good evening, my incredibly sweet, fantastically beautiful Mabel.
Lord Goring, when did you arrive, and where have you been? Also, you are very late.
Have you missed me?
Awfully.
Then I'm sorry I didn't stay away longer.
How very selfish of you. I suppose that's just another one of your bad qualities you are always telling me about. Are there many more, and are they very bad?
Quite dreadful. When I think of them at night, I go to sleep at once. By the way, may I ask who brought Mrs. Cheaverly here?
Mrs. Who?
Cheaverly, that woman in heliotrope.
I think Lady Markby brought her. Do you think she's attractive?
Very. At least I did once.
Oh, then you know her.
I haven't seen her for years. I wonder what she came back to England for.
Ah, so you finally arrived, sir, did you?
Here he is, Lord Caversham. Here is your good-for-nothing son.
So I see. Well, young man, what are you doing here?
Well, father...
Don't answer me, sir. Oh. Wasting your life as usual, you keep too late hours. I heard of you the other night at Lady Rufford's, dancing till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, that's an exaggeration, Father. I'd left there and was dancing at Lady Craven's by 4.
Can't understand it. Can't understand how you tolerate London society. Yeah, things gone to the dogs. A lot of confounded nobodies talking about nothing.
I love talking about nothing, Father. It's the only thing I know anything about. Ah, there she is again.
Who?
That woman.
What woman? Speak up, speak up. People have names, you know.
I'm referring to Mrs. Cheevely, Father.
That one. Never could stand Heliotrope.
Mrs. Cheevely. Why is everybody talking about Mrs. Cheevely? Personally, I have far more important things to think about.
Oh, really? Such as?
I'm hungry.
Ah, so have I, my dear. Knew there was something bothering me. Couldn't think what it was. Mabel, my child, may I have the honor of taking you down for some supper?
With pleasure, Lord Gavisham. Will you join us, Lord Goring?
Yes, Mabel, what is it?
Found it, sir. Are you going to put some food in your stomach, or aren't you?
Not at the moment, thank you, Father. I observe that Mrs. Cheevely is talking to your brother now, Mabel. I believe I'll go over and join them. Excuse me. Ah, Robert, good evening. I've just been talking to your sister. Remarkable girl, Mabel.
I'm glad you think so, Arthur. Oh, Mrs. Cheevely, allow me to introduce to you Lord Goring, my closest friend and the idlest man in London.
I have met Lord Goring before.
I didn't think that you'd remember me, Mrs. Cheevely.
My memory is under admirable control. And are you still a bachelor, Lord Goring?
I believe so, yes.
How very romantic.
Oh, no, not at all.
And Mrs. Cheevely, I cannot tell you what a pleasure it is to meet you at last. Why, our attachés at Vienna have been writing to us about nothing else but the brilliant and charming Mrs. Cheevely.
Thank you, Sir Robert. And of course, I feel that I know you quite well already. Especially since your wife and I are old friends.
Old friends? You and Gertrude?
She has just reminded me that we were at school together here in England. I remember it perfectly now. She always got the good conduct prize.
And you, Mrs. Cheevely, what prizes did you get, if I may ask?
My prizes came a little later on in life, Lord Goring. I don't think any of them were for good conduct.
Oh, very, very interesting and provocative. May I ask what has decided you to honor London so unexpectedly? Our social season is almost over, you know.
Oh, I don't care about the London season. It's too matrimonial. People are either hunting husbands or hiding from them.
And in which category are you, dear Mrs. Cheevely?
Neither, I assure you. My latest husband is unfortunately quite dead, poor dear. And being a widow has certain privileges without their usual responsibilities.
May I ask, Mrs. Cheevely, are you staying in London long?
That depends on the weather, the cooking, and you, dear Sir Robert.
Indeed.
You see, I've come all the way from Vienna to ask you to do something for me.
Oh, that makes me very happy, Mrs. Cheevely. Do tell me what it is.
I would like to, Sir Robert, but you see, it's a rather a private matter.
Oh, it's quite all right, Mrs. Cheevely. You may rely on my discretion. Go right ahead. Say anything you like.
I'm sorry. Won't do, Lord Goring. This is my secret, and I shall decide who shall hear it. Shall we go into the conservatory, Sir Robert? What I wish to talk to you about is a certain political and financial venture of the utmost importance.
Indeed.
I believe you are quite familiar with a financial organization known as the Argentine Canal Company.
As Under Secretary for Foreign Affairs, I am aware of it, yes.
And what do you think of it?
Very little, I'm afraid. I consider it nothing but a commonplace stock exchange swindle.
A speculation, a brilliant, daring speculation. I have invested very largely in it, Sir Robert.
Who could have advised you to do such a foolish thing?
My old friend and yours.
Who?
Baron Arnheim. The late Baron Arnheim. You remember him, don't you?
Yes. Mrs. Cheevely, I regret to inform you that I have every intention of laying an unfavorable report on this Argentine business before the House of Commons tomorrow night.
That you must not do, Sir Robert. In your own interest, to say nothing of mine, you must not do it.
My own interest? My dear Mrs. Cheevely.
Sir Robert, I will be quite frank with you. I want you to withdraw that report.
Mrs. Cheevely, you cannot be serious.
I am quite serious.
In that case, if you will allow me, I will call your carriage for you. My dear madam, you have lived so long abroad that you seem unable to realize that you are talking to an English gentleman.
I realize that I am talking to a man who laid the foundation of his career by selling a cabinet secret to a stock exchange speculator.
What do you mean?
I mean, Sir Robert, that I have in my possession a certain letter.
What letter?
Written by you to Baron Arnheim years ago when you were Lord Radley's secretary, telling the Baron to buy Suez Canal shares. It was written 3 days before the government announced its own purchase. He paid you well for this information?
It's not true.
Did you think that letter had been destroyed? How foolish of you.
Mrs. Cheveley, the Suez Canal was no more than a dream at the time. The House of Commons had not yet passed the bill. It might have been rejected.
It was a swindle, my dear sir. You made your own fortune out of one canal. You must help me and my friends to make ours out of another. If you don't...
It's impossible, madam.
You are going to make it possible. You know what your English newspapers are like. Suppose I were to give them the details of the scandal and the proof of it. What would it do to your career, Sir Robert? What would it do to your dear, straight-laced, puritanic wife who wins all the good conduct prizes?
Mrs. Cheveley, I will give you any sum of money you want if you will hand over that letter.
Sir Robert, even you are not rich enough to buy back your past. No man is. I will be in the ladies' gallery of the House of Commons tomorrow night at 11:30. Immediately after you have made the announcement I wish, I shall hand you back your letter. Otherwise, good night, Sir Robert.
Ah, there you are, Mabel. May I sit on the sofa beside you?
I can't imagine what for, Lord Goring. However you may.
Thank you. Mabel, I wish to discuss with you a matter of the utmost importance.
Really?
A matter that's been concerning me for some time. Are your eyes green or hazel?
I consider this a rather presumptuous question, Lord Goring. However, they are green. Must you sit so far away?
Not at all. There, is this better?
Closer, please. Thank you. And now let us talk about... Oh!
What's the matter?
Look what I just found, right here in the corner of the sofa.
Where on a... What, do you mean you found this diamond brooch just now?
Yes, my hand, when you insisted on moving close to me.
Oh, did I insist? What did I say?
Never mind. You were most forceful and eloquent. It made me tremble. Yes, I'm quite sure I trembled. At any rate, that's when...
You found it. I see. It's quite beautiful, isn't it?
I wish it were mine. My brother won't let me wear anything but pearls. And I'm thoroughly sick of pearls, Lord Goring. They make one look so plain and virtuous and intellectual.
I wonder who could have dropped it.
Look how the diamonds pick up the light. I've never seen a lovelier brooch.
It's a bracelet.
It's a brooch?
Well, it can be used as a bracelet. I've seen this type before. May I have it, please? Thank you.
Lord Goring, what are you doing?
Putting it in my pocket. Mabel, I'm going to make a rather strange request to you.
Oh, pray do. I've been waiting for it all evening.
About this brooch.
Oh.
I don't want you to mention to anybody that you found it. Should anyone inquire about it, please let me know at once.
What a curious request.
You see, I gave this brooch to somebody once. A long time ago.
Lord Goring, you mentioned somewhat earlier this evening that you knew Mrs. Cheveley a long time ago.
I did.
I also recall quite distinctly seeing Mrs. Cheveley seated on this sofa.
She was? How coincidental.
Yes, isn't it? Have you nothing further to say, Lord Goring?
Nothing.
In that case, I shall bid you good night.
Going to bed?
Naturally. It's quite late, and I seem to recall an engagement to go riding tomorrow morning. At 10, is it not?
Yes, quite right. I hope you won't be late.
I won't be late.
Well, I'll be punctual this time, darling, if it kills me.
It probably will. Hadn't you better leave now?
At once. Goodbye. See you tomorrow, 10 o'clock, darling, and wild horses couldn't make me late this time.
I've been looking for you. That woman, Mrs. Cheveley.
Yes, Gertrude?
As she was bidding me good night just now, she said, "Oh, Robert, it's not true, is it? You are not going to lend your support to this Argentine canal scheme. You couldn't."
Mrs. Cheveley told you about that?
Yes. She seemed to taunt me with it. Robert, listen to me. I know this woman. We were at school together. She was untruthful, dishonest, even then. She was sent away for being a thief. Why do you let her influence you?
I was mistaken in the view I took of that matter, Gertrude.
You mean you've changed your mind?
Let us say that circumstances have forced me to change my mind, yes.
Robert. I know that there are men with horrible secrets in their lives. Men who have done some shameful thing and who, in some critical moment, have to pay for it. But not you, Robert. Not you. That is true, isn't it?
Gertrude, there is nothing in my past life that you might not know.
I was sure of it, Robert. And now you will write, won't you, to Mrs. Cheveley, and tell her that you cannot support this fraudulent scheme.
Must I?
Yes, Robert. If I am to remain in this house, you must.
Oh, I see.
You will write her at once. Now.
Yes, Gertrude. Now.
Lord Goring, wake up, sir. Wake up.
Oh. Oh, it's you, Phipps. Go away.
Beg pardon, sir, but it's 9 o'clock.
Nine. Phipps, what time did you say? What?
9 o'clock, sir.
Oh, I've got an engagement to ride with Mabel Chilton at 10.
Oh.
What kind of day is it, Phipps? Anything I ought to know? About anything?
The world seems to be rotating in its usual orbit, sir. A message arrived from Sir Robert Chilton. It is marked urgent.
Urgent, eh?
It is on the night table, my lord.
Oh, yes.
Please come at once.
I must obtain your advice on a matter of the utmost urgency, Robert. Oh, Phipps.
Yes, my lord.
Lay out my things immediately.
The riding things?
No, no time for that now. Just any old thing.
Yes, my lord. Since it is rather a dark day, may I suggest the dove gray broadcloth and the mauve waistcoat, perhaps?
Admirable. Well, what else do I have to do today, Phipps?
Well, sir, we have an appointment at the bootmaker's at 3.
Bootmaker's at 3.
And then there's the tailor at 5:30. Those new worsteds he spoke to us about.
What, both on the same day, Phipps? Oh, how tiresome. How can I hope to remember it all?
Well, perhaps if I were to jot it down on a small piece of paper, sir.
Oh, yes, thank you, Phipps. Splendid.
Oh, dear.
Phipps, in future, I should like you to try, if you can, to arrange a less exhausting schedule for me. I shall be quite tired out for the reception at Lady Windermere's this evening.
Yes, my lord. Will there be anything else?
Yeah, just draw my bath, and I'll have a small breakfast. Porridge, eggs, a bit of ham, kippers. No chops, Phipps. I'm not up to chops today. Some jam, muffins, coffee, and have the carriage ready to convey me to Sir Robert's.
Oh, good. It was an exhausting day.
Now, let me understand this, Robert. This woman, Mrs. Cheveley, she has that letter in her possession now.
Yes.
And on your wife's insistence, you sent her that note last night saying that you absolutely refused to do as she wished.
Yes, Arthur.
Yes, it's very awkward, isn't business, isn't it, Robert? Very, very awkward indeed. Because there's one thing.
Yes?
Well, you should have told your wife the whole story about the origin of that letter.
Oh, I couldn't. Well, you know, Gertrude, in all England, there's no woman with a higher concept of honor and integrity.
Robert, no man should ever have a secret from his own wife. She invariably finds it out anyhow. Women have a wonderful instinct about things. They can discover everything except the obvious.
Arthur, this woman, this Mrs. Cheveley, you've known her for some time, have you not?
Yes.
Did you know her well?
I knew her so little that I got myself engaged to be married to her once. Lasted 3 days.
Why was it broken off?
Oh, I forget. By the way, have you tried her with money? She used to be confoundedly fond of money.
I offered her any sum she wanted.
And she refused? Oh, well, Robert, while there's still hope, you must continue to resist.
I will resist, as long as my wife knows nothing. I will fight her to the death, as long as my wife knows nothing.
I beg pardon, Sir Robert.
Yes, Mason, what is it?
Miss Mabel wishes to remind Lord Goring that she has an engagement to go riding with him at 10 o'clock.
Oh, of course she has. I remember distinctly.
It is now 11:45.
Oh, now, Robert, you see what you've done. Mason, tell Miss Mabel that I'm suffering from a slight cold with chilblains. No, it's my horse that has the chilblains, and my physician forbids us both to indulge in any exercise whatsoever.
Yes, my lord.
But that doesn't, however, alter our luncheon engagement to carriages. My physician insists on a large luncheon. You will remember all that, Mason, won't you?
Yes, my lord.
Oh, Mason.
Yes, Sir Robert.
Will you tell Lady Chilton I shall be up to see her directly?
I am afraid Lady Chiltern is engaged at the moment, Sir Robert.
Oh, nonsense. What can she be doing at this hour of the morning?
She is entertaining Mrs. Cheeveley, sir.
What? What's that you say, Mason?
Mrs. Cheeveley arrived a short time ago in a somewhat agitated condition, sir. She insisted on seeing Lady Chiltern at once. They are together now in the drawing room, sir.
Inquire about a diamond brooch you say you lost in this house last night, Mrs. Cheeveley.
Yes, it's in the form of a diamond snake with a ruby, Lady Chiltern, a rather large ruby.
I will inquire of the servants, of course. Should it be found?
Thank you. Lady Chiltern.
Yes, Mrs. Cheeveley.
I would like again to thank you for permitting Lady Markby to bring me to your reception last night.
Mrs. Cheeveley, I think it only fair to tell you quite frankly that had I known in advance who you really were, I should not have permitted you to enter this house.
Really? It's easy to see that after all these years you haven't changed a bit, Gertrude.
I never change.
You mean that life has taught you nothing?
It has taught me that a person who has once been guilty of a dishonest action may be guilty of it a second time and should be shunned.
I see. Would you apply that rule to everyone?
Yes. To everyone without exception.
Then I'm sorry for you, Gertrude. I really am.
You understand now, Mrs. Cheeveley, that for many reasons, any further acquaintance between us is quite impossible.
Do you know, Gertrude, I don't mind your talking to me like this a bit. I realize that you dislike me. Personally, I've always detested you. And yet I have come here to do you a service.
Like the service you wished to render my husband last night, I suppose. Oh, thank heaven I saved him from that.
Then it was you who made him write that insolent letter?
Yes.
If you're wise, my dear Gertrude, you will make him do what I tell him.
You are impertinent. What has my husband to do with a woman like you? Leave my house, Mrs. Cheeveley. You are unfit to enter it.
Your house? A house bought with dishonor, in which everything has been paid for by fraud.
Gertrude, what is it? What's going on here?
Robert.
There he is, Lady Chiltern. Ask him. Ask him about the origin of his fortune and career. Get him to tell you how he sold a cabinet secret.
Robert, it's not true.
Well, Sir Robert, aren't you going to answer your wife?
You may go now, Mrs. Cheeveley. You have done your worst.
Oh, no, not yet, Sir Robert. I give you till 11 tonight. If by then you have not complied with my wishes... Well, never mind. I do not believe in threats. They are unnecessary when one is as certain of winning as I am. Good day, Sir Robert. I trust you sleep well tonight, Gertrude.
You are listening to An Ideal Husband, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel, George Hicks.
Good evening. During the past 2 weeks, copies of U.S. Steel's annual report for 1951 have gone out to all of its 268,226 stockholders. It has been made easily available to U.S. Steel's more than 300,000 workers, and to the general public as well. It's a big report, interesting to read, and packed with really exciting photographs. But most important of all is the spirit behind this 36-page document. For in these pages, U.S. Steel reveals to anyone interested, be they friend or critic, the intimate details of its operations, plans, policies, and finances. This really is a cards-on-the-table way of doing business. Now, one of the things the management of U.S. Steel feels that you and I and all the rest of the public should understand is the corporation's true profit picture. I think this latest annual report does an excellent job of explaining clearly and simply both U.S. Steel's 1951 profit position and the relation of profit to its future as a corporation. Because the portion of the annual report devoted to this summary of U.S. Steel's financial affairs was prepared under the direction of Enders M. Voorhees, Chairman of the Corporation's Finance Committee, he is best qualified to tell you about it. Mr. Voorhees.
United States Steel has always recognized that its management has a threefold obligation. First, to its stockholders whose invested savings provide U.S. Steel with its plant and equipment, or what is commonly called the tools of production. Second, to the employees who operate these tools of production. And third, to the nation which U.S. Steel has served faithfully for over 50 years. Now, we are proud of the way in which our obligation to the nation has been steadfastly fulfilled. U.S. Steel has proved a bulwark of strength to the nation both in peace and in war, a fact demonstrated clearly with today's record-breaking tonnages of ever higher quality, tailor-made steel. Facts and figures show that our obligations to our employees have been equally well met. The trend of their pay over the years has been a rising one, whether it is measured in actual dollars received or in buying power. Among all American manufacturing employees, their average pay ranks in the top 10%. Outstanding safety records bespeak good working conditions, as well as good safety training, both of which are continually being improved. Developments in machinery and equipment make work easier as well as safer. The fulfillment of our obligations to the stockholding owners, however, is a matter of deepest concern to me, as it is to so many thoughtful people throughout our land. With wages and other costs rising, with prices being controlled, and with taxes now taking more than two-thirds of the profit margin, the share of stockholding owners has been subject to an unfair squeezing by forces beyond the control of management. Last year, for example, despite an 18% increase in sales, both profits and dividends declined. Why? Well, taxes increased 60%, and there was a 17% increase in payroll. In fact, total payments to employees were more than 13 times the dividends paid to stockholders. Now, the facts and figures of this story are given in the annual report. The story is of vital interest to every American citizen. Every thoughtful person realizes that there just isn't any good reason for people to keep on investing their savings in these job-creating tools of production if they are arbitrarily going to be prevented from earning competitive profits. Everybody equally realizes that without the tools of production, the jobs of operating those tools would inevitably disappear. People would become unemployed, and America would become weak.
Thank you, Mr. Voorhees. I'm sure our listeners appreciated those basic facts about U.S. Steel's production, sales, and profits. I hope that those of you who are interested in the details of U.S. Steel's profit picture or any other phase of its 1951 operations will write to me, George Hicks, in care of U.S. Steel, 71 Broadway, New York 6, New York, for your copy of U.S. Steel's annual report.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by United States Steel, the industrial family that serves the nation.
Of An Ideal Husband, starring Rex Harrison as Lord Goring and Lily Palmer as Mrs. Cheveley, and featuring Adrian Corey as Mabel Chiltern, Malcolm Keane as Lord Caversham, and Madge Elliott as Lady Gertrude. It is late that evening in the drawing room of Lord Goring's flat. His lordship, immaculately garbed in evening clothes, is adjusting a small flower in his lapel as Phipps, the butler, stands impassively by.
Know something, Phipps? I am the only person of the smallest importance in London at present who wears a buttonhole.
Yes, my lord.
You see, Phipps, fashion is what one wears oneself. What is unfashionable is what other people wear.
Yes, my lord.
Just as vulgarity is simply the conduct of other people.
Yes, my lord.
I don't think I quite like this buttonhole, Phipps. It makes me look a little too old, don't you think?
I don't observe any alteration in your lordship's appearance.
Well, for the future, a more trivial buttonhole, Phipps, on Thursday evening.
I'll speak to the florist, my lord. She has had a loss in her family lately, which perhaps accounts for the lack of triviality your lordship complains of.
extraordinary thing about the lower classes in England. They're always losing their relations.
Yes, my lord. They are extremely fortunate in that respect.
Hmm.
This note just arrived by messenger, sir.
Oh, thank you. That'll do, Phipps.
Yes, my lord.
Pink notepaper. In Gertrude Chilton's handwriting. I need you. I trust you. I'm coming to you tonight, Gertrude. So she's found out about Robert. Oh, poor woman, she'll be absolutely shattered. Nothing but an earthquake could move Gertrude Chilton to pay a call at a bachelor's flat, especially at this hour.
I beg pardon, my lord.
Yes, Phipps, what is it?
Lord Caversham is here, sir.
What? Now, isn't that just like a parent to drop in at a time like this?
Well, do I come in or don't I?
Oh, come in, Father. I'm delighted to see you.
I doubt it. Well, sir, what are you waiting for? Help me off with my cloak.
Oh, yes, Father. Mm.
Which is the most comfortable chair?
This one, Father. It's the one I use myself when I have visitors.
Thank you. No draft, I hope, in this room?
No, Father, no.
Glad to hear it. Can't stand drafts. Well, sir, I want to have a serious conversation with you.
My dear Father, at this hour?
It's 10 o'clock in the evening, sir. What is your objection to the hour? I think the hour is an admirable hour.
Well, the fact is, Father, this is not my day for talking seriously. I am sorry. It's not my day.
What do you mean, sir?
Well, during the season, Father, I only talk seriously on the first Tuesday in every month from 4 to 7.
Well, make it Tuesday, sir. Make it Tuesday.
But it's after 7, Father. My doctor says that I'm not to have any serious conversation after 7. It makes me talk in my sleep.
Talk in your sleep? What does that matter? You're not married? And that, sir, brings me to precisely what I've come to talk about. Arthur, it is, in my opinion, high time for you to get married. Do you realize you're 34 years of age, sir?
Yes, Father, but I only admit to 32. 31 and a half when I have a really good buttonhole.
I tell you, you're 34, sir. And there's a draft in this room which makes your conduct worse.
Oh, God bless you, Father.
Why did you tell me there was no draft, sir? I feel it distinctly.
Oh, so do I, Father. It's dreadful, isn't it? Can I help you on with your cloak?
What for, sir?
Well, aren't you leaving on account of the draft?
I am not leaving, sir. Put down my cloak,
sir. Certainly, Father. Phipps!
Yes, my lord?
Is there a good fire in the smoking room, Phipps?
Yes, my lord.
Let's go in there, Father. This way, please.
Very well. Aren't you coming, sir?
Well, in a moment, Father. I wish to speak to Phipps. Just make yourself comfortable. Oh, yes. God bless you, Father. Yes. Phipps. There's a lady coming to see me this evening on particular business. Show her into this room at once when she arrives, you understand?
Yes, my lord.
It's a matter of the gravest importance, Phipps.
I understand, my lord.
No one else is to be admitted under any circumstances.
Yes, my lord.
Oh, now, that may be the lady now. If it is, show her in here, Phipps, and remember, I'm not at home to anyone else.
Good evening, madam. Won't you come in?
Thank you. I am Mrs. Cheveley. I wish to see Lord Goring.
His lordship told me to ask you, madam, to be kind enough to wait in the drawing room. This way, madam.
Lord Goring expects me? Are you quite sure?
Quite, madam. His lordship told me that if a lady called, I was to ask her to wait in the drawing room. His directions on the subject were very precise. This, madam, is the drawing room.
How dreary. Very well, I shall wait here, since his lordship insists.
Very good, madam.
I wonder what woman he's expecting tonight. It will be amusing to catch him. Men look so silly when they're caught. Wonder who she is. Is that perfume? Oh, no. It's these primroses on the desk. I suppose she sent them, whoever she is, with a few amorous words on blue notepaper. No, it's pink. I know this handwriting. It's Gertrude Chilton. Yes, the 10 commandments in every stroke of the pen. I need you. I trust you. I'm coming to you tonight. Well, how very interesting.
But, my dear Father, if I'm to get married, surely you'll allow me to choose the time, the place, and the person. Particularly the person.
That is a matter for me, sir. Marriage is not a question of affection. It comes later on, if at all.
Oh, yes, of course. In married life, affection comes when people thoroughly dislike each other, doesn't it, Father?
What? Tell me, sir. Do you always understand what you say? Do you?
Oh, yes, Father, if I listen attentively. Now, goodbye, sir. Thank you for dropping in. So nice to see you. Goodbye.
Oh, there you are, Arthur.
Robert!
Good evening, Lord Caversham.
How did you get... Oh, never mind. Here's your hat, Father. Give my love to Mother.
I'll do no such thing, sir. Could quite upset her. Good night, Robert. Good night to you, sir.
Well, Robert, this is a surprise.
Your man, Phipps, insisted you were not at home.
Robert, the fact is I'm horribly busy tonight. Even my father had comparatively cold reception. He complained of the draft all the time.
Arthur, I've got to talk to you. I'm in great trouble. My wife has found out everything.
Mrs. Cheever told her this morning?
Yes. I need a whiskey and soda.
Oh, certainly. Phipps? Phipps?
Arthur, I'm at my wit's end. My career hangs on the balance. You've got to help me. Advise
now,
me.
Now, Robert, there's no use anticipating trouble. Oh, Phipps, bring some whiskey and soda.
Yes, my lord.
Phipps?
Yes, my lord.
Robert, will you excuse me for a minute? I'd like to give some directions to my servant.
Certainly, certainly.
Phipps, this is important. When the lady calls, tell her I'm not expected home this evening, tell her.
The lady has already arrived, my lord.
What?
She's in the next room, as your lordship requested.
Oh, you did perfectly right. Thank you, Phipps.
Yes, my lord.
Now, Robert, you were saying...
Arthur, I've come to a decision. I have made up my mind what I'm going to do in the house tonight. The debate on the Argentine Canal is to begin in a few minutes. I shall vote against it.
Oh, yes, well, Robert.
It may be the last political act of my life. It may estrange my wife from me, break up my home. What's that?
What?
That noise.
Oh, what noise?
I tell you, I heard a chair or something fall in the next room.
No,
there's someone listening.
Don't be absurd. Robert, there's no one there.
There is someone, I'm sure of it.
No, Robert, you're excited. There's someone
in there, I tell you. I'm going to see
someone. No, Robert, don't.
And why not?
Well, Robert, well, there is someone there. Someone I'd rather you didn't see.
Ah, I thought so. Well, why shouldn't I see him?
Well, it was one gentleman to another. It isn't a him, it's a her.
All the more reason why. Who is she?
Oh, no, my dear fellow, have you no discretion?
Arthur, will you answer one question on your honor as a gentleman?
Well, ask the question.
On your honor, is the woman in that room Mrs. Cheeveley?
Robert, no. On my honor as a gentleman, the woman in that room is not Mrs. Cheeveley.
Thank you, Arthur. I believe you, and I'm sorry I
regret to intrude, Lord Goring, but I find your drawing room rather confining.
Mrs. Cheeveley?
Naturally. Your servant said you were expecting me. He asked me to wait.
So, Arthur, this is not Mrs. Cheeveley, eh? On your honor as a gentleman,
Robert, I assure you I didn't know. No, wait, don't go.
Let me pass, please. You have lied enough for one evening.
No, Robert, listen.
Let me pass, I say.
Well.
Mrs. Cheeveley, do you mind telling me exactly what you're doing in my drawing room?
Listening. I have a perfect passion for listening through keyholes.
Mrs. Cheeveley, in a way, I'm glad you happen to be here. I'm going to give you some good advice.
Oh, pray don't, Lord Goring. One should never give a woman anything that she can't wear in the evening.
Well, let me put it another way. You've come here to sell me Robert Chilton's letter, haven't you? What is your price?
Goodness, how absurdly English you are. The English think that a checkbook can solve any problem in life. No, my dear Arthur, money is not what I want.
Well, what is it that you want, Mrs. Cheeveley?
Why don't you call me Laura?
I don't like the name.
You used to adore it?
Yeah, that's why.
Come here. Come here and sit down.
Certainly. And now?
Arthur, you loved me once.
Did I?
And you asked me to be your wife.
Yes, I suppose that was the natural result of my loving you.
And you threw me over because you thought you saw poor old Lord Morlick trying to have a violent flirtation with me.
Oh, need we go into this? I'm under the impression that my lawyer settled that matter with you on certain terms, dictated by yourself.
At that time, I was poor. You were rich.
Yes, quite so. That's why you pretended to love me.
I did love you, Arthur. Quite truly. And you loved me. You know you loved me.
Did I? Perhaps I did. Shall we come to the point?
Very well. Arthur, I'm tired of living abroad. I want to come back to London. I want to have a charming house here, a salon. If one could only teach the English how to talk and the Irish how to listen, society here would be quite civilized.
Yes, I see what you mean.
Also, So I seem to have arrived at the romantic stage. When I saw you last night at the Chilterns, I knew you were the only person I ever truly cared for. Ridiculous of me, isn't it?
Quite.
Nevertheless, my dear Arthur, on the morning of the day you marry me, I will give you Robert Chilton's letter. That is my offer.
Are you really serious about this?
Quite serious.
You know, I should make you a very bad husband.
I don't mind bad husbands. Having had two already, I'm quite used to it.
And if I should decline your kind offer?
Your friend Sir Robert Chilton's career in the House of Commons becomes a thing of the past. So does his wife, if I know Gertrude.
It's quite a dilemma I'm in, isn't it?
I offer you a choice, Arthur.
Oh, there's no choice, madam. What you're offering is a selection between two catastrophes. Naturally, I choose the one that happens to someone else.
As you wish. Well, that seems to be that. Goodbye, Lord Goring.
Goodbye.
Won't you shake hands with me?
Mrs. Cheveley, this morning you went to the home of one of the kindest women in the world to degrade her husband in her eyes and try your best to destroy her faith in him. No, thank you. I'd rather not shake your hand.
You are unjust. I did not go to taunt Gertrude at all.
Then why?
I called simply to ask whether a diamond brooch that I'd lost somewhere last night had been found.
Oh, I see. A diamond snake brooch with a ruby?
Yes. How do you know?
Because I found it. I have it right here in my pocket. Is this your brooch?
Of course. How nice to get it back. You see, it was a present.
Really? Would you like to wear it?
Certainly, if you will pin it on.
Pin it on? I'll do better than that. Will you hold out your arm, please?
Why, yes, but why should I? You're putting it on as a bracelet. How intriguing. I never realized it could be worn that way.
You didn't?
No. Rather handsome on me this way, don't you think?
Rather. Much handsomer than when I saw it last.
When was that?
Oh, 10 years ago, on Lady Berkshire, from whom you stole it.
What do you mean?
I mean that you stole it from my cousin, to whom I'd given it, Mary Berkshire.
That's not true.
You know it's true, Mrs. Cheveley. The truth is written all over your face.
I deny the whole affair from beginning to end. I say I've never seen this wretched thing. Here, take it. Now, take it and... Oh, how does this thing come off?
Well, I remember there's a secret spring somewhere or other. Let me see. It's rather difficult to find, isn't it?
Lord Goring, will you kindly take this object from my arm?
No, I don't think so.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to call my servant, rather an admirable chap, Phipps. He always comes when he's called. Naturally, I'll have to tell him to fetch the police.
No, please. No, don't do that. I promise you, I'll do anything, anything.
Give me Robert Chilton's letter.
No.
Very well. Phipps!
Yes, my lord?
You see, Mrs. Cheveley, always comes when he's called. Will you step into the street, Phipps, and fetch a constable?
No, don't! I agree to your terms, Lord Goring.
Thank you very much. That'll do, Phipps.
Very good, my lord.
Well, Mrs. Cheveley, the letter?
Here you are.
Thank you. This seems to be it. I congratulate you on your admirable common sense. And now, may I remove the bracelet for you?
Thank you.
No hard feelings, I trust?
None whatsoever, Lord Goring. I have no intention of harming Robert Chilton ever again. On the contrary, I'm going to render him a great service.
Well, I'm charmed to hear it. It's quite a reformation.
I can't bear so upright a gentleman, so loyal a friend of yours, being so shamefully deceived. And so? I find that somehow his gentle little wife's confession has, strayed into my hands for safekeeping.
Confession? What confession?
I mean that I'm going to send Sir Robert Chilton the love letter his wife wrote to you tonight.
Love letter? What?
I need you. I trust you. I'm coming to you, Gertrude.
Would you have to give it me back at once?
No, Lord Goring. Returning one letter is enough for one evening, don't you think?
Give me that letter. You shall not leave this room
but
until...
But most definitely I shall. Phipps! Phipps!
Did you call, my lord?
No, Phipps,
Of course he did, Phipps. And thank you for being so well-trained, Phipps. Lord Goring merely wanted you to show me out. Good night, Lord Goring.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by United States Steel, the industrial family that serves the nation. We pause now for station identification.
This is 50,000 watt clear channel station KFI Los Angeles. Curtain rises on the third act of An Ideal Husband, starring Rex Harrison and Lily Palmer, and featuring Adrian Corey, Malcolm Keane, and Madge Elliott. It is early the following morning as Lord Goring, immaculate as ever, in gray topper, morning coat, and spats, knocks on the door of Mrs. Cheveley's apartment at Claridge's Hotel.
Well, Goring, what a surprise to find you here, and so early in the morning.
May I come in?
Please do. Of course, I'm always happy to see you, Lord Goring, but may I ask why you came?
Well, since you paid me an altogether unwelcome visit last night.
You're returning my call, and in the same spirit? How gallant. I feel, however, that I must warn you that, living at an hotel, I have no butler to protect me. I'm quite alone and defenseless.
Dear me.
Of course, I could scream. But someone might hear me, might they not? No, Lord Goring, whatever you do, I promise not to scream. Now, what did you say you came to see me about?
A letter.
A letter?
I believe it was addressed to me from Lady Chilton. You stole it last night, as I recall.
Oh, that one. Did you wish to refresh your memory as to its contents? I believe it said, I need you, I trust you.
I know quite well what it said. I want that letter, Mrs. Cheveley.
Laura.
Very well, Laura.
Now, that's better. Come here and sit down. Now, tell me, why are you so anxious to gain possession of this letter? Are you in love with Gertrude Chilton?
Not at all.
Is she in love with you?
No.
Then why?
For reasons that would be obvious to anyone but yourself, my dear Laura. Robert Chilton and his wife are my friends.
And that is the only reason?
Yes. Don't you believe that?
No. Why do you sit so far away?
I believe it's what's called a primitive instinct for safety.
And are these instincts aroused by all women?
No, only those I was once engaged to. My father, who is a most indulgent parent, would never forgive me for making the same mistake twice, particularly at that price. May I have that letter?
No.
I'll pay you handsomely for it.
No.
Do you mind telling me why?
I'll tell you if you will tell me something first.
I'll answer any question, providing it's personal.
This is quite personal. Are you in love?
Yes.
With whom?
Mabel Chilton.
And you will marry her?
Yes, as soon as she'll have me.
Even if her brother and his wife are faced with a scandal that might result in divorce and social ostracism?
Even then.
And nothing will change your mind?
Nothing.
Then I'm extremely sorry, Lord Goring.
I don't know what you've got to be sorry about.
But you see, that letter you wish has already been sent by messenger to Sir Robert. He will receive it within the hour. Had I known about you and Mabel Chilton, well, perhaps I would not have sent it. I'm not sure. Goodbye, Lord Goring. Perhaps we will meet again someday when you're in a less romantic, or shall I say, a more romantic mood. Goodbye.
Good morning, Mason. Is Lady Chilton at home?
Yes, my lord. Won't you step into the library, sir?
Sir Robert's not in there, is he? I don't wish to see him just now.
No, my lord. There is no one in the library but your lordship's father.
My father? Good heavens.
Oh, there you are, sir. Come in. Come in.
Good morning, father.
Well, sir,
Have you been thinking over what I spoke to you about last night?
Oh, I've been thinking about nothing else, Father.
Engaged to be married yet?
Not yet. I hope to be before luncheon.
You can wait till dinner, if the earlier hour would be any inconvenience to you.
No, thanks, Aubrey. I think I'd sooner be engaged before luncheon.
Yeah. Now that you're here, sir, why don't you propose to that pretty Mabel Chilton? Of course, I don't suppose there's the slightest chance of her accepting you.
I don't know how the betting stands today, Father.
If she did accept you, she'd be the prettiest fool in England, sir.
Just what I should like to marry. A thoroughly sensible wife would reduce me to a condition of absolute idiocy in less than 6 months.
Oh, Lord Caversham.
Come in, Mabel. Come in, my dear.
Good morning, Mabel.
It's very pleasant to see you so early in the morning, Lord Caversham.
To see your brother, my dear. Politics.
Good morning, Mabel.
Lady Caversham is quite well, I trust.
Well enough, thank you, except for a slight headache. I always get out of the house early when Lady Caversham has a headache. Makes her affectionate, you know.
Good morning, Mabel.
Oh, Lord Goring, are you here?
Yes, I've been here for some time.
Really? Of course, you understand that after breaking our appointment yesterday, I am never going to speak to you again.
Ha! Serve him right, too. And now, my child, I must bid you good morning.
Oh, please. I hope you're not going to leave me all alone with your son.
I happen to be on my way to Downing Street, my dear, and I don't think I can take him with me. It's not the Prime Minister's day for seeing the unemployed. Good day.
I have always thought that people who don't keep their appointments are quite horrid.
Detestable.
I'm glad you admit it, but I wish you wouldn't look so pleased about it.
I can't help it, Mabel. I always look pleased when I'm with you.
Then what a pity that I must leave at once.
Oh, Mabel, don't go.
Why not, pray? Could it be that you have something to say to me?
I have something very particular to say to you.
Oh, is it a proposal?
Well, yes, it is, yes.
I'm so glad. Proceed.
Mabel, I love you.
Naturally.
What do you mean, naturally?
I mean, naturally. Only I think you might have mentioned it before. I'm sure I've given you heaps of opportunities.
Now, Mabel, please be serious.
I am. Continue, please.
Mabel, I've told you that I love you. Can't you love me a little in return?
Oh, darling, if you knew anything about anything, which you don't, you'd know that I adore you. Everybody in London knows it except you. It's a public scandal the way I adore you.
You do? Then why didn't you ever...
Why didn't you ever?
Oh, never mind. Darling, would you mind tilting your chin upward a trifle? It's been such an exhausting day. Thank you.
Oh, darling.
Of course, I'm not nearly good enough for you, my darling.
I'm so glad. I was afraid you were.
And I'm a little over 30.
Yeah, you look weeks younger than that.
Sweet of you to say so.
I know it. And now, darling, I really must go and see Gertrude.
Must you really?
I'll be waiting for you in the conservatory.
In the conservatory?
Yes, third palm from the left. Don't be long, dear, and don't fall into any temptations in the meantime.
Yes, Mabel, while you're away, there are none. It makes me horribly dependent on you. And kindly remind Gertrude I'm waiting to see her. Gertrude, I tell you, I am certain that Mrs. Cheeveley has already sent your husband that letter.
But it was an innocent letter.
Of course. And to prove it, you must tell Robert the whole story at once.
You mean you want me to tell my husband that the woman you expected was not Mrs. Cheeveley, but myself? That it was I whom you thought was concealed in your flat at 10:30 at night? You want me to tell him that?
And why not?
Because he would never understand.
Gertrude! Gertrude!
It's Robert.
Gertrude! This letter, it just arrived.
Letter? What letter is that, Robert?
I need you. I trust you. Did you really write this, my dear?
Yes, Robert. I wrote it.
Oh, my dear, is it true? Do you really trust me and need me? Do you?
Of course she does, Robert. Was there no other enclosure in the letter?
No, should there be? Or what do you know of this?
Oh, no, not a thing. It seems like a silly thing to do, that's all. Go to all that trouble to say so little.
So little? It's the best news I... Gertrude, my dear, why don't you say something?
Well, I'm just overwhelmed, darling, that's all. That's the way you received my poor little effort.
Yes, so am I, Othello, so am I. You'll be glad to hear, Robert. Last night, Mrs. Cheeveley gave me your letter to Baron Arnheim, and I destroyed it.
Arthur! How can I ever thank you? Ask me anything, my boy, anything.
Very well, I will. Robert, you are your sister's guardian. I wish to marry her, and I want your consent. What's the matter, Robert? Are you ill?
Arthur, when I called on you late yesterday evening, I found Mrs. Cheveley concealed in your rooms. Is that correct?
Yes, it's quite correct.
I recall that you were engaged to be married to her once. It seems that her fascination for you has returned. Naturally, under the circumstances, I cannot permit you to marry my sister.
I see.
But, Robert, it was not...
Gertrude, don't.
Robert, it was not Mrs. Cheveley Lord Goring expected last night.
Not Mrs.
It was I, Robert. I had written him a letter saying that I trusted him and I needed him. And I was coming to him for advice.
You mean this letter? You wrote it to him?
Yes. But I changed my mind about going. It seems, however, that Mrs. Cheveley called. She saw my letter and stole it. She then sent it anonymously to you.
But why?
She wanted her revenge. She wanted you to think... Oh, Robert, you know what you wanted you to think. And I was afraid to tell you the truth because...
What? Gertrude, did you think so little of me? Arthur, I apologize most humbly to you. Of course, since my objections no longer exist, you may marry my sister.
Thank you, Robert. Now, may I have my letter back? It was written to me, you know.
No, Arthur, you shall exchange it for something better. You shall have Mabel instead. And it is my sincerest hope that you will make her an ideal husband.
An ideal husband? No, no, I hope to do much better than that. Mabel, Mabel, I'm terribly sorry I'm late again.
The curtain has fallen on the Theater Guild on the air production of An Ideal Husband, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation. We express our thanks to our stars, Rex Harrison as Lord Goring and Lily Palmer as Mrs. Cheveley. And to our featured players, Adrian Corey as Mabel Chilton, Malcolm Keane as Lord Caversham, and Madge Elliott as Lady Gertrude. Our thanks also to the other members of our cast, as Sir Robert Chilton, John Merivale, as Phipps, Francis Compton, as Mason Stewart Burge. And now, here again is Elliot Reed with a word about next week's play.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, the Theatre Guild on the Air will present the radio premiere of a recent Theatre Guild stage success, The Silver Whistle, in which our stars will be James Stewart and Diana Lynn. Thank you.
Tomorrow marks the beginning of National Boys Club Week. Wherever there is a boys club, there is less juvenile delinquency. United States Steel salutes the boys' clubs, an investment in America's future. We need more of them. Is there one in your community? Remember, next week on the United States Steel Hour, The Silver Whistle, starring James Stewart and Diana Lynn. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product, is your guide to quality steel. The Theatre Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Halbern, with Armina Marshall, executive producer. S. Mark Smith is editor. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy. Your announcer is Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at the same time.